Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome to Gays on Film. This podcast is where we, a pair of gays, talk about what we're watching. I'm Declan.
And I'm Ned.
And in this episode, we're going to be talking everything 2023.
Everything.
Is that what it sounded like?
That's what it sounded like, you said, yeah.
In this special review of the year episode, we will touch on spoilers throughout, but we won't go into too much detail, I'm sure. But a lot of these films will have been out for a while now, so where have you been? But first, let's just do a general...
Where have you been?
Let's just do a general 2023, how do we feel kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're fast approaching the very end of December, and when I think of all of the films we've watched this year, I think my Letterboxd count is currently on something like 195. Mm-hmm. And we've got a handful before the end of the year. So hopefully I'll pip 200.
What are you on?
Let me confirm the number. I should have really done this before we started. But I am on... Oh, I'm on 199. So
oh, you'll do that.
Tonight when we watch Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, that'll get me 200.
Yes.
Right. So I'm thinking it's been a great year for comedy. Do you agree?
I think so.
It's been really nice when we saw No Hard Feelings. We were like, this feels like one of those kind of classic comedy genre films. It's up to date. The humour is funny and inoffensive. And Jennifer Lawrence's performance was just brilliant.
She was brave as well for a few of those scenes, especially when she gets kicked in there.
In there, see you next Tuesday.
Yeah.
Another strong one for comedy was Joyride. For me, absolute highlight for the genre, because I'm not usually a big kind of silly comedy fan.
This is the thing, when they're good, they're good, but they can be really wrong.
It can quite easily grate on me, and I was nervous when this started, but it was so, so funny. I think I've been on record saying something like Hangover, but done better.
Yes.
And
With women.
Cracking. And another one that seems to find its way back into my mind rent-free is Renfield. I often think about it.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe I quite like Dracula stuff anyway, so maybe it's just that. But I remember thinking that was a really good, funny take on our old pal.
I thought it was a little bit disappointing.
Did you? Mm. Oh, well... That was just me. Animation, strong year.
Yeah.
Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. Absolutely loved it.
Hybrid animation type thing.
It's still animation.
Yeah.
And then other stuff like Across the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Another good one from the Spider-Man section of Marvel.
Yeah.
Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. That was great. That was gorgeous. And I really liked the Elemental animation style as well.
Yeah.
And Elemental as a film.
Same.
It's been good for that for me. Anything else?
I think it's been quite a good year across the board. And like, talking a bit more business-wise, it's been quite an interesting and different year compared to previous years. In the top 10...
As regards kind of things like the strikes and stuff.
Well, that as well, because that kind of... I think that disrupted, obviously, well, it disrupted Hollywood, but I also think it disrupted box office because people weren't able to promote the films. Because I don't think, I don't think I fully realise how much some people see a film promoted and think, oh, I'll go see that. Well, because I know what's coming all the time.
And also, so, it's surprising when you're not in our line of, I was going to say work, but this isn't work, interest.
Yeah.
Your first thought when you think, what should I do on an evening, unless you're seeing films being advertised to you, isn't necessarily go to the cinema.
Yeah, I know, I know. But from a box office perspective, the only MCU film in the top 10 worldwide this year is Guardians 3, which when you look at back at other years...
It's quite a good one.
You know, there was so many... Like, each entry, if they did three in a year, was in it.
Yeah.
I think Disney will see The Little Mermaid's performance from a live-action remake perspective and think didn't do as well as they maybe hoped it would.
I don't get this kind of... It feels like, even though it was a nice idea to kind of do live-action remakes of all of those classic animations... The first handful were fine, but when things really aren't going as well as you'd kind of expect them to, why are they still forcing them out?
No idea.
Oh, it's just, it's not satisfying. It's not fun. I know there are people that like them, but they're nowhere near as good as the animation.
No. I personally think also that Disney didn't have a very good year as a studio. And I think what sums that up is I think they will find Indiana Jones only doing 384 at the worldwide box office a massive disappointment when the film is reportedly cost $300 million to make.
Oh, shit.
There was something said on the Empire podcast the other day and I thought it was really good. Films that have cost $100 million this year have done way better than films that have cost $200 to $250.
Just goes to show, throwing money at something doesn't guarantee its quality.
And I do agree, it's like, you know, I think maybe these films that just always cost at least $200
are just always, a lot of them, like, to do with buying the royalties and stuff. Not the royalties, the rights.
I don't think so. No. No. But very happy to see Barbie reign supreme as number one at the box office this year.
Yeah.
On $1.4 billion.
Yeah.
I did think that would make a lot of money, but even I was quite...
Didn't think it'd be $1.4 billion.
No, I didn't think it'd be top of the box office. Next is the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Where did that come in at?
$1.36 billion.
Wow.
And then Oppenheimer, which is still actually in cinemas in some places, which is mad. At $955 million, which I think for an R-rated 3-hour film that is all talking about the atomic bomb to make nearly a billion dollars is phenomenal. So I basically, what I'm saying about the year is I think Hollywood could do with learning some lessons about what's going on.
Well, I think they can also kind of, we can look beyond Hollywood to see what's been going on as well, because there's been some great kind of indie cinema coming through.
And not just indie, but also a lot more foreign language films coming through. The Boy and the Heron, which we've just seen today.
Yeah, amazing.
What was the other one recently?
Past Lives, wasn't, was it?
It was partly.
Bits and Bobs. Anatomy of a Fall was part and part. Really, really good. Oh, there
what was that
one.
Other one? That Godzilla Minus One.
Godzilla Minus One.
Fully
that was
in
great.
Japanese. And yeah. I just think people are a lot more willing to go and see foreign language films.
Do you think it's because I've got a theory about this? Because I think anyone... I'm gonna very generalise here. Anyone under 30 tends to have their default Netflix settings as subtitles on. So people are a lot more used to reading subtitles than they once were, because I think before streaming in the home was a big thing, mostly people were like, oh, I can't be asked reading the subtitles, but now we're really used to it, so foreign language films or non-English language films seem to not be so off-putting by the fact that you have to read them for the whole thing.
Well, I think there's three parts to it. One is what you've just said. people having subtitles on.
Yeah.
Two stays in the streaming realm because there's been so many foreign language or non-English language streaming shows that have gone massive.
Yeah.
So that's another thing where if you're going to do it at home, you might think, oh, well, I've really enjoyed that at home. I'll go spend a bit more at the cinema.
Yeah.
And the other one that I genuinely always stand by is Parasite winning Best Oscar.
Oh, my God, yeah. Sad news about him.
I know. But that, doing that, and it's literally in one of my top films of all time, a South Korean film, like...
Oh, and it was just so good as well.
Watch a film.
I can't believe it took me about 2 years to watch Parasite.
Oh my God, it was amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, I'm quite happy. I've got some... I actually remember recording this episode last year, and I've got some trends that I'm still keeping a beady eye on, which leads into the next thing that we're going to talk about, which is like LGBTQ plus movies, TV.
Right.
A lot of queer stories, and I don't want to say relegated, but I'm going to say it because it's easy for me to do it.
Yeah.
Are relegated to either streaming, TV, or they are very indie films that not many people are going to see.
Right, okay.
I would still like to see wider representation of queer stories within the big Hollywood temples.
Yeah.
But I still think we might be a long way from that because obviously these films go out in most countries around the world and unfortunately not all countries are having that.
A lot of countries ban or censor films just for having kind of hints or whispers of LGBT representation in there. So still... strides to be made as far as that goes, I think, on the global stage.
Yeah. So let's go over queer highlights then now. Yeah. I want you to maybe go for film to start off with.
Well, I've only got film.
Well, that's perfect then. And then if there's any that you've missed, then we can start having a discussion about others.
Yes. Let me shout out some lesbians.
Go for it.
We've got Blue Jean, amazing, really kind of softly told story of a secondary school teacher in Thatcher, Britain.
Section
28 type time.
Yeah.
I think it was just pre-Section 28.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. Set in the Northeast. Lovely accents, lovely colour palette, lovely, just really, really nice put together. If you can watch it, I'd absolutely recommend. It's a lovely story.
Mm-hmm.
Tar, another lesbian, powerhouse.
Oh, yeah. I didn't really think of that from a queer perspective.
Well,
yes.
Here we go. That was one of the early kind of big players in the year, I think, about a conductor from some kind of the symphony orchestras and things.
But what I liked about that is her sexuality wasn't necessarily... Well, both her sexuality and her femininity weren't... She didn't deem them as important things, but they were important to the story. But
they
part
formed,
of her narrative that...
They formed part of her, but not defining
her. But it was quite interesting to also see somebody so complex played from that perspective.
Yeah, and I think it's Cate Blanchett, isn't it?
Like Cate Blanchett did... queer person.
Disappeared into the role. I wasn't watching somebody acting. I was watching Lydia Tarr be Lydia Tarr, is what I felt.
I would agree.
A fantastic film. Again, really, really good fun. Maybe perhaps opposite end of the spectrum, not quality-wise, but genre-wise, Bottoms.
I had a feeling that's what you were going to discuss.
Our favourite lesbian comedy of the year. Teen kind of edge of the slasher genre, but not really.
It's a fucking batshit film.
So fucking mad.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it. We've got an episode on it, haven't we? Yeah, we have. I'm sure we've talked about it.
Yes, we have. Yes.
So go check the episode out. Watch the film. I thought it was really, really fun. It had us cackling in the cinema.
People are saying it's this generation's Mean Girls. I could be like, I would love it to become that kind of
culture. It is a really fun... It's a really fun, stupid 2 hours to spend.
Yeah,
and it's just, it's really, really brilliantly put together. I think that might bring me to the end of lesbians.
Okay.
So we'll start talking about, oh no, Scream 6. That had some lesbians in it. LGBT.
Yes, it did. Yeah. And Scream.
Nice and meta, really kind
and
of.
And Scream is a very camp.
Yeah, yeah. Scream's gay, a very camp thing.
Film. A franchise, isn't it? So, yeah.
So there's a lot of diversity in the kind of the main friendship group in Scream 6. Those of you who've seen the last couple will know. And I think, you know, just because it gets into how meta it all is, it's kind of nice just to see a bunch of queer people discussing who's going to get murdered next.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Let's move into some other LGBT. Do you want to come in with any TV or should we cover all the films
Let's
first?
Do films first.
Okay.
Yeah. I've got a big bit about TV later, so yeah.
Little bit more indie to start with, Passages.
Oh, great film.
Really, really good. Very kind of serious, dramatic, gay. Yeah.
And beautiful really, sex scenes. Like, I don't even mean like
very kind
they were
of,
but they were very tender and
very
intimate.
Almost real. Like, you could, it might sound weird to say, I was going to say, you could almost imagine yourself having that sex.
Yeah. No, I get what you mean. It wasn't porn.
No.
It was like what normal people look like when they have sex.
Yeah. Love that one. It was, it's just dramatic, just like very dramatic. I don't know how else to describe it. We've got an episode on that one as well.
We do. Cool.
So you can listen to
I
how
didn't
else
realize
I described
this was
it.
Such a plug for this year's episodes, but I guess it is, isn't it?
Well, why not?
No, plug no, I ourselves. Agree. I'm just what did you just say?
Why not plug ourselves? one we haven't seen actually it's maybe my oh no we did see it I don't know what I'm thinking of
what is it
Strange Way of Life
oh
what's his name director
Almodovar
thank you Pablo
Almodovar
short film with Pedro Pascal and
Ethan Hawke
as some cute little gay cowboys. Love it.
I enjoyed it for what it was, but I think I've said when we've discussed it, I can't get fully bought into a short film. I don't know what it is
You're
about.
You're not a big
it.
Short film person,
no,
are you?
No.
No, I think it's lovely. And I think what I like about short films is there is a certain level. There's a certain level of imagination has to go into what happened before and what happens after
yeah,
for
I
the
get
film
what you
itself
mean.
To find meaning, which I love. And because it was gays and cowboys, two of my favourite things. how could it possibly go wrong?
God.
So I wanted to shout that one out too. We didn't do an episode on it though, because it was a short film.
It was very short.
Very short, and it would have been a short episode. And, I mean, I say last but not least, there's probably a whole bunch of LGBT cinema I'm missing in this list, but also Red, White and Royal Blue.
Which have to shout out because...
I mean, it took over the internet for a good couple of weeks.
Of our podcast, our own stats, it's absolutely...
It was the first episode where we were looking at the numbers and we were like, oh my God, people actually listen to this.
Yeah, like
so thank you everyone for that.
Hundreds.
That was really nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, Red, White and Royal Blue, loved it. Even though it was like...
I mean, it was naff.
It was a bit of a
fun.
Naff film,
yeah.
But like... A fun one to have in the kind of gay canon, let's call it. Canon like
hey,
story universe,
we,
not canon like
for so long
fire.
We've watched films with lots of straight people and some
hey,
of them
hey.
Were good and
some
of
them
were average
were
and some of them
shite.
Were awful. So if we're going to have more gay films, we're going to have the full...
We do need the full spectrum.
We do, yeah.
I think those probably... round up my fave LGBT films from the year. There were a couple that we haven't seen as well, I must say.
All I would add to that is Saltburn had quite a lot of queer.
Oh my god, yeah, it's not even... it is on my list. I just missed it while I was reading.
There's just so many, and we do see a lot of films and what I watch a lot of telly, so...
Yeah.
But yes, I thoroughly enjoyed Saltburn. I still stand by with that. I'm not sure what point it was trying to make, but I would maybe like to watch it again to see if I'm as critical about the class stuff as I was first watching it.
I think this is maybe one of those films that if you know that and you've kind of already had the sour taste, the second time you want to watch it,
just enjoy
you want to just enjoy it, because it actually is a really quite well put together film.
Oh, I mean, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous, yeah.
Acting's great. It's a bit raunchy. I mean, you'll have a good time watching it. Remove that from the debate to enjoy it. I mean, it exists now.
And it seems to have blown up since it's gone on Amazon before Christmas. I feel like everyone watched it whilst
is why more it's of doing our so episode well. Is doing so well. Oh my god, we've done episodes on so many of these. Well done, us.
I know. Is that you done on films?
Yes. Tell me about some telly.
I just wanted to shout out just a few, literally three. We've got Heartstopper Season 2, which we did do an episode on.
We did.
We've got Sex Education Season 4, which we also did an episode on.
We did.
So let's talk about those two Netflix ones first.
They're like opposite sides of the same coin, by which I mean high school, British high school coming of age, teen stuff. One of them's really kind of innocent and fluffy. One of them is, let's talk about sex frankly and honestly.
Uh-huh.
And I think for that reason, I'm glad they both exist. But yes. Neither of them represent reality.
No.
They're both such fantasy, which I think I love.
But what I think it... I'd probably give a bit of kudos to Sex Education here. It makes it more apparent that that's in some fantasy world kind of thing. Whereas Heartstopper doesn't feel... It feels like they're trying to reflect the world that we live in. But it's not quite...
I think that Heartstopper might actually represent quite a number of teenagers is...
Yes, I would just probably go a bit younger.
Viewpoints. I don't know if it's an age thing for me.
Would you not?
I just think maybe the people in your year that you didn't really hang out with or register particularly much might feel a bit more akin to Heartstopper than Sex Education.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously, Sex Education's over now, but Heartstopper will be back, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
And then I also just wanted to shout out Interview with a Vampire, which I binged.
Oh, that's not the third one of your three that I thought you were going to say.
What did you think I was going to say?
Fellow Travellers.
That is on my list as well, sorry. Oh, yeah, let's get to that after. Yeah. But Interview with the Vampire, what I really just wanted to talk about from a queer perspective is obviously we had the original film with Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt, which totally glossed over how it is pretty much a queer love story in the book. It's homoerotic, all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
Totally kind of took... two vampires and took all of that out of it in the film. Now, this version was the queer fantasy that we all deserved. So it was great and I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. And aww. I look forward to season two, which hopefully, I think it's already been out in America. Hopefully we'll be getting that soon.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted to, I guess that kind of showed how times have moved on. But again, also proves my point that it's not in the cinemas, it's on TV.
Yeah.
So almost like, not necessarily queer stories again relegated to the small screen, but a lot of these stories probably do better fully fleshed out in an 8-hour TV show than a 2-hour film anyway.
Yeah.
So
I wonder what would happen if cinemas started doing like weekly or monthly viewings of the episodes of TV shows. Think anyone?
I think
would
they've
go?
Done some screenings of like the Mandalorian episodes and stuff recently.
Because remember, my student union used to do like Game of Thrones every week.
Yeah.
And the local drag bar sometimes does Drag Race, don't they?
Not quite the same thing. Maybe. Who knows? I mean, TV is very cinematic these days, so it could happen. And there's some TV episodes that I'd love to see on the big screen. So.
Especially like the season finales of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Food for thought, Cine Worldview, Picture House, whoever you are.
Odeon.
There's loads.
Yeah. But yeah, fellow travellers, one series that we haven't quite finished yet. We've got two episodes left. One, it's hot as fuck. But two, it's really naughty. Two, it tells a story of a time period that I don't think we see a lot of, 50s and 60s, from a queer perspective. Obviously, we're seeing later life. It follows them quite a lot through to the 80s, where the AIDS crisis is very much looming. But I feel like whilst those stories are important to continue to tell, we've seen a lot of them.
It does take... I like that it's taking kind of a step further back in time, telling some queer stories. And I think what the queer community deserves, apart from, you know, rights... is period dramas about queer people.
Because we've existed a long, long time.
Of them. I mean, off the top of my head, I can think of maybe Portrait of a Girl on Fire and...
Portrait of a Lady on Fire, or is it?
Oh, in French, it's a young girl.
Oh, is it?
So I was mistranslating, my bad.
Could come back, though.
Can't even think of another one. Oh.
We've got Ammonite, which I still haven't seen.
Benedictine. I don't know what Benedictine is. Benediction.
Can I have the from Benedictine kind of Second World War? Please. Eggs Benedictine.
I can't really think of any others.
No, I would like to see more.
Yeah.
Of that, but I'm looking forward to finishing it, and I would love to interview some of the talent involved in that.
If you're listening, reach out.
So we shall see. That is my LGBTQ plus shout outs pretty much done.
Amazing.
So I guess, Ned, you can probably go and put the kettle on because I'm about to talk telly for a bit. Some of this we did watch together.
If I put the kettle on, no, it'll be all loud.
I know, but some of this we have watched together. Fellow Travellers is in there already without us finishing it as some of my favourite TV of the year.
Oh my God, it's so much fun.
Also, the linking in TV as well to kind of queer perspective, The Last of Us, third episode that broke everyone's hearts and the internet, which kind of moved away from the focused narrative and focused on this gay couple navigating the world ending. And it was
heartbreaking. Like, how many seasons are there likely to be of The Last of Us?
Well, two's in development. I would say probably maybe three or four.
Oh, I don't know if I could do that. Because I kind of...
Why? There's only one at the minute. Just watch
I once challenged myself to try and binge it all in a day so that I can...
Did you?
Well, just because if I watch anything zombie-esque, I know they're not zombies.
Yes, it's fine. I know. Yeah.
But I will then have zombie nightmares, and I'd rather just try and do it all in one day so that I only have one night of zombie nightmares rather than a little bit here and there where I have lots of nights of zombie nightmares. So, and I think what I'm going to have to do as well is wait until the nights are shorter so that if I wake up sweating at 2 a.m, I've only got 2 hours of lying in bed terrified, rather than if I wake up sweating in the middle of winter, I've got like 6-7 hours of lying in bed terrified.
Oh God. Well,
that was maybe a bit too much of my psyche that people needed.
Season 2 probably won't be out till 2025, so you've got all this summer if you want to watch it.
Okay, I'll try it.
But that third episode will make you cry.
Yeah.
But yes, great show overall. Looking forward to what comes next. One that we did watch together, Happy Valley Season 3, finale.
Love Happy Valley.
Loved it a lot. I think the finale shocked us, but it gave us the finale that we didn't know that we needed.
Yeah.
Like, I think everyone was expecting loads of action, loads of, like, over-the-top, crazy ending, but we kind of just got them two confronting each other in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But that was...
That was exactly what you wanted.
Not what I wanted.
No, but what you didn't know you wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But loved Happy Valley.
Yeah.
I want to, again, give a shout out to one of my favourite streaming... Well, my favourite streaming service that keeps me hooked. Apple TV Plus. I watched Blackbird this year, which is that Taron Egerton one. Silo season one, which was amazing sci-fi. Like, absolutely loved it. Everybody lives in this post-apocalyptic world where they all live underground in silos, and there's all the politics of at the bottom you're poor, at the top you're better off, all that kind of, it's just amazing. And Rebecca Ferguson is excellent in it. Hijack with Idris Elba. This is like corny television, but it was that.
That was one on the plane.
Yeah, it was like that kind of television, though, that we know that it's not the best TV, but it's just so addictive.
There's a couple of episodes that I was sitting around while you had it on.
Yeah.
I did find myself quite into it.
Yeah. As soon as one episode ends, you're like, I need the next one now. And so that was my Apple TV. I have watched more, but that was a little shout out. Gen V, the boys spin-off, really enjoyed that on Amazon. The Fall of the House of Usher, loved that, totally binged that on Netflix. I'd recommend anyone.
That's the kind of thing, if we had another lockdown, that's what I would watch, but I'm never gonna find the time for that now. And I already seen the last episode.
Yeah, you did, didn't you? My mum was watching it.
Yeah.
But I would like to talk about probably two of the best TV shows potentially of all time, but definitely this year. Succession season 4.
Knew you were going to say that.
Finishing. Just amazing. They made some wild creative choices. Killing off Brian Cox's character in episode 3 of a 10-episode season was just like jaw on the floor. What the hell? One of the best episodes of TV I've ever seen. And I caught up on season 1 of The Bear and then watched season 2. I can't quite put into words how much I love a show about chefs in a shit, what was shitty restaurant, which now they've made better. But it is just
great.
It's just amazing.
Oh, lovely.
So, so amazing.
I didn't know, and I could be wrong here, Jamie Lee Curtis is in it.
There was an episode where there was loads and loads of small, like, role. Okay. Like, it was just, oh my God, that's that person. Oh my God, that's that person. So she's not a main character.
The amount she goes on about it on Instagram, I mean, you'd think she was a leading role.
She goes on about everything.
I love her.
But, yeah, a great year for telly again. There's some stupid people out there saying, has peak TV ended?
What's peak TV?
Well, like when people were saying the golden age of telly as streaming first took off.
Right, yeah.
Has it ended? But then if I even do it, that's just a snapshot of some of the shows I've watched this year.
I thought you were going to mention Slow Horses. You always talk about that.
Oh, shit, yeah. But that's such a new one. That's phenomenal as well, Apple TV. Yeah, this is what I mean. There's just so much. I just think now there's so many streaming services and there's so, like,
yeah, if you try and catch a bit of them all, you end up spreading yourself a bit thin.
If you like a specific genre, crime or whatever, sci-fi even, you could literally fill your time just watching the genres that you like. Like, totally.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I think you thought, oh, well, I'll try this one, I'll try that. But, like, for the talk of sci-fi, Silo, Foundation, or any of the superhero, like, if you're that kind of geeky sci-fi superhero, like, you could just spend all your time just watching that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, now we move on to biggest disappointments.
And there are some big ones.
And I like to I like to frame it like this, because a lot of work goes into every film and TV show.
Yeah.
And there's so many things that could happen to make a film or show not land with the audience.
Yeah.
So I don't particularly like top 10 worst films of the year.
No, and I don't think it's fair to say, like, I know I'm guilty of it sometimes, like saying, oh, that was shit.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people have put a lot of work in and they wouldn't intentionally make it shit unless they were intentionally making shit, in which case you'd probably not mind that it was shit.
Malignant looking at you.
You are.
Malignant looking at you.
Exactly.
And I think a lot of these, when I say these are disappointments, it's because I was really looking forward to them.
Yeah, and that's another thing about it being disappointing. It's about kind of what you take into the cinema, if you're watching at the cinema or the sofa. If
it's
you're
just how you build it up in your like, own head, isn't it, as well?
If you're anticipating something and it doesn't live up to what you want it to be, it's more likely to be disappointing. And if it's had a really long and drawn out like promotional period, you might kind of fill the gap with your imagination and then it not land. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are lots of reasons films can be disappointing. It doesn't mean they're necessarily shit.
Yeah.
Although, ask me again after I've gone through the list.
So I have 7 on my list of biggest disappointments.
I also have 7.
So shall we go one each and see if they overlap?
Yeah.
You go first.
They're not really in any particular order.
Fine, neither am I.
Super Mario Bros. Movie.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, this is going to challenge what we've just said straight away because it was fucking shite. But
no, I don't think it was fucking shite.
It was awful.
What it was a hot mess.
What it was Nintendo not letting the studio do anything remotely creative with the characters and basically just doing a 90-minute film promoting the Super Mario Bros.
Yeah.
But hey, what do we know? It's the second highest grossing film of the year. So.
It took $1.36 billion in the worldwide box office. Yeah. Like, I was disappointed that Nintendo kept such a tight grip on what the characters could do. Yes. Is what it felt like. It was. That people who know how to put a film together and tell a good story in a compelling way weren't able to do that with this because I think somebody in a writing room somewhere was like, we have to fit in this from this game, this character from here, this character, this character. They all have to be relevant. They all have to have lines. It has to visit every single place that Mario ever goes. And it just...
And it's getting a sequel as well. So why couldn't it have left some of the, like, you know...
Exactly. Well. It was... I'm not surprised that it did really well at the global box office because people love Mario, myself included.
Yeah.
So what I think they should have done is trusted the audience a bit more that they would have got that return and allowed, like left some wriggle room for Mario 2 to go somewhere new to continue the story. And it also wasn't that funny.
No, it wasn't.
Which is silly because, I mean, it's a perfect opportunity to make a really good comedy.
I think Nintendo need to take a leaf out of Mattel's book and get people to make amazing films.
Yeah.
Not just trying to carbon copy one medium.
Not just turn a game into a film.
Yeah. But let them have creative license and go off. And I'm sure Mattel
obviously
had a few things
Nintendo...
where they were like, oh, I don't want to see that in Barbie. But have a conversation about it and just understand why.
And I imagine Mattel, like Nintendo, will have had final sign-off on the final cut.
Yeah.
Or at least had a say in the final sign-off of the final cut. So it's not like they had no control over it.
Yeah, it does make me a little bit worried because I know, Nintendo are doing a couple of other adaptations. Yeah. And they're doing Zelda. And I'm
we'll just have to see how it goes. If they learn from it, great. If they don't, because why would they? Because it took $1.36 billion. Then here it is. So yes, Mario for me. Big disappointment.
Wasn't even on my list because I think I had pretty low expectations anyway.
Fair enough. Your turn.
We've already talked about this one. But unfortunately, it is Sex Education Season 4.
Oh, I didn't even put any telly on, but I haven't watched any.
Yeah, not much. I just found it, sadly... We got into this a lot in our episode. It just felt like they were doing too much, even though it ended well.
There were too many new characters for it to be the final season.
And I think this is a perfect example of me saying, that's because I thought that was going to be amazing, amazing. I was going to love every bit of it. Yeah. And then I was watching it, I was like, oh... Not quite what I expected.
Yeah.
Not liking this new vibe. Like,
fair enough.
I know each season has to kind of push you out of your familiarity, kind of. But it just went a bit far. And I didn't... And the new characters as well. I don't know if I liked any of them.
No, not...
I don't think it would have been an issue if I'd have actually liked them. But I didn't. I found them all quite annoying. So yes, that is
fair enough.
My first.
What did we? Oh, another one that was disappointing to me. Exorcist Believer.
Not even on mine either. But yes, a massive disappointment.
I mean, for such like an iconic horror franchise, for that to be such a flop, like, wasn't really scary. Story didn't really feel like it
didn't
mattered.
It didn't really do anything. No. Well, I don't really have anything else to say because it was just crap.
Yeah. So I was disappointed by that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your turn. Another telly one for me before I move on to films after. Secret Invasion. Yeah.
Oh.
Truly one of the worst things that
Marvel... Is it because they cut your scene?
No. One of the worst things that Marvel has ever done. Like...
Including The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah. Secret Invasion in the comics is such a cool story where, from a political perspective, the Skrulls have got into human life and we don't know who's a Skrull. Even some of the superheroes have been Skrulls in the past in some of the comics. It was truly, like, awful. And the character of Nick Fury was not the Nick Fury I recognise from other films. Like,
yeah,
even just the Marvels coming straight after. That was not the same person.
I feel that the listeners can't get the hurt in your eyes as you're saying that.
Oh, I was just so disappointed because...
It's quite moving me almost to tears.
Overall, to be honest, and I think we can say that because a lot of Marvel stuff is either in... Well, I've got that in my biggest disappointments, and then a lot of the other Marvel stuff we haven't even really mentioned because they were kind of fine. But like Ant-Man and the Wasp, the Marvels, like Marvel in itself as a franchise has quite badly gone off.
Well, I mean, that segues me into my... next one, actually, Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania.
Yeah.
Just, it relied so heavily on CGI and then didn't do it.
At times, I remember quite liking it because it felt quite Star Wars-y.
Yeah.
I quite liked some of the stuff that they did in the Quantum Realm, but I think for a film that they seemed...
Some of it really felt like it undermined itself.
Yeah, and I feel like for a film that was... marketed as we are introducing the next big bad for this, not just phase, but for this saga.
Yeah.
And
well, I mean to be
honest,
it's all
going to change now after
the way it's
played
out. Maybe it's kind of a good thing they didn't do such a hot Kang intro.
Yeah, because they can recast it or totally scrap it altogether.
Because it almost doesn't really matter off the back of Quantumania.
Yeah, and it really suffered from everything was green screen. Like, everything.
Everything.
When they filmed that film, it must have just been the humans with blue or green screen all around them. Like, there was... Yeah. I would agree. I would agree. And Marvel has faltered quite badly, I would say, this year. Over to me.
Yeah.
Napoleon.
Oh, that's not on mine.
Yeah. I just was expecting for a Ridley Scott historical drama / epic a lot more than what we got. And I had somebody described it as one of the best comedies of the year. And it wasn't trying to be, but it was the worst scenes where I was like, this is ridiculous. And I think I said a lot of my judgment of it is... one of those biopics where they try to do all of the person's life rather than just focusing on a smaller part. And I still...
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that critique. Because a lot of biopics, like, for example, Elvis, started with him as a kid and finished with him as an adult.
Same problem with it, though, for me.
Oh. I can't think of any that don't.
Exactly. And most of them aren't very good.
Ah, right, okay, fair enough.
I always think, oh,
that back.
Like Napoleon, do it as a TV show.
It would be a cracking TV show.
Like,
to be
show
fair.
What his life was like, have more time to build their central relationship as well, because that was another thing I massively felt was
that
underdone.
That was Vanessa Kirby, wasn't it?
Great actor, but yeah. Well, both of them are.
Wasted.
But just, yeah.
Fair enough. All
please
right.
Do better for Gladiator 2, Ridley.
Yeah. My next one is 65.
Oh my God. I can't believe how different our lists are, but this is totally just like us, for me totally forgetting.
Did
well,
we
not
do
just
an episode
forgetting.
On 65?
I don't think. I would have been random if we did.
Sneaking suspicion we did.
So
I'm
what was wrong with 65?
It just didn't make fucking sense.
Yeah, it was a bit weird, wasn't it?
It was a bit pointless. And like, it could have had a really compelling ending, but didn't. And I feel like had I been in the writing room, I'd have dropped this this nugget of perfection just to be that like mic drop at the end. And it totally missed it, which did not redeem and could not maybe have redeemed how crap the rest of the film was. Not that I think films are crap, obviously. But
dinosaurs
just,
in space.
The
though,
story
I would
was
have wa-
just...
Yeah. Dinosaurs in space, I wanted more. Like,
yeah.
That premise, go for it. Like,
yeah.
And do it better.
Yeah, just...
Especially with Adam Driver involved. Like,
honestly, exactly. Yeah. I nothing more to say.
Okie doke. For me now, The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. God.
Another one not on my list.
I've gone into this a lot on our episode, so I won't go over it too much, but I just found it. I actually haven't had a cinematic experience this year where in the final act, I could literally not wait for the film to end.
Oh.
Like, I was looking at my... Not just looking at my watch every maybe, like, 15 minutes. It was like I was literally counting the minutes down.
Oh, God, that's painful.
I just found it so... I thought it started all right, and then it just was a weirdly paced film.
Yeah.
Too much singing. Yeah, just not for me.
Right. Megan.
Megan's on mine.
Megan's on mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mithregan.
If you have listened to our episodes, you might call out my bullshit, because I do remember speaking quite highly of it, because I did enjoy watching it. It kind of felt like it swept social media. It was going to become this massive sensation. Then the film came out, and it was, I think, one of those examples where the production was in on the joke. Like, they knew they were making, like, a lowbrow horror. But it has not had the impact I wanted it to. It seems like it came and went. They were very quick to kind of suggest that they were going to do kind of four more Megans.
Well, there is a sequel in development.
Exactly. And I just think maybe it could have been quite happily left as just the one and nobody ever needs to see it again.
Never going
to
happen.
No, I know.
Actually, I think we're both quite down on this film compared to the general population.
Maybe.
I personally have one thing that I thought would have fixed this film for the better.
Go on.
It felt like it was a 15-18 premise trying to be moved into a 12A.
Right, okay.
So I liked the campiness and I liked all the daft bits.
Yeah.
But I just wish it had been a bit scarier. Like, even the violence wasn't really
scary.
Violent. Like, I wanted...
It never felt like the stakes were all that
no,
high.
No, like, I want you to really... I want it to be gory and gratuitous for that reason. Like, if you're going to go over the top,
yeah,
like we just
properly.
Watched Thanksgiving recently. Do that kind of stuff. Like, I think it was just trying to be something that could have been better to be being a bit more mature. But I don't agree with you that I do think it's had a massive pop culture impact. I just think there's so much stuff this year and all the time now that things don't get a lot of time. But I can bet your bottom dollar as soon as the trailer for the sequel comes out, it'll be right back in the zeitgeist.
Oh, that was a good sentence.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah, proud of that one.
Glad we got that on.
It's my turn now, because we both had that one, so we've got one less from me now. The Little Mermaid.
It's not mine either.
Yeah. Fine. Nothing more.
Yeah.
Nothing less.
Okay.
I had problems with the way it looked. I liked Halle Bailey.
Yeah.
That Scuttle song is one of the worst things I've seen this year.
Yeah.
Very clearly.
Aquafina can't be proud of that one.
Very clearly written by Lin-Manuel Miranda, who I have loved in the past and do love some of his stuff. But I'm just finding him being forced into everything now, a bit like, oh, we're going to have a single rap now.
A phrase I have learned and I was just since knowing you, I think could quite aptly be placed here. Gets where a fart wouldn't.
Yes. Very much so. Yeah. Yeah. And I just thought it was not a patch on the original.
Okay. I've got two more. Do you want them both? Or have you got two?
You do one. I've got a last one. Do the last one.
Plane.
Oh, God. I could not have been disappointed by that, Ned, because I had the lowest of expectations of Plane. There is no way that could have made my list.
I just didn't see the point. Like,
well, I know exactly.
Why bother making it? It would have sat perfectly happily in the noughties.
Yeah.
It has no place being in the cinemas in 2023. And that is probably all that needs saying on it.
That is hilarious. Playing.
Go on, what's your next one?
This is quite a late one to the biggest disappointments.
Is it the same as mine?
But it's Chicken Run.
Oh, Dawn no, of the it's not the same as mine.
Yeah.
Aw.
Solely for the reason
that... definitely a anticipating greatness.
It is.
One, isn't
Solely,
it?
Yeah. And we literally just put out our Chicken Run Dawn of the Nugget episode today. So I'm not going to go over it again because listen to that. Listen and I'm sure you've watched the film anyway because it was on Netflix over Christmas. So what else were you doing?
Well,
but that's all mine.
I actually discussed that one while I was sat in the barber's chair today.
Oh, did you?
Hello, Naomi. yeah, we both kind of were on the same page of it.
Oh, you were a 4-star. I was a 3. Yeah. It was Naomi.
4.
Really?
She loved it.
Yeah. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, she had a big smiling face while she was talking about it. Okay. Really sweet. My final disappointment of the year is Leave the World Behind.
This is really fascinating that because I think we both come to this in a bit of a different way because I didn't have any expectations because, well, you did maybe because some people had told you how good it was.
Yep. Gianni.
Don't trust our friend's film.
Well, that and also, I think maybe I was... This just goes to show, actually, the value of having actors doing interviews on TV because we saw Julia Roberts sitting on Graham Norton's sofa talking about it. And I mean, she wasn't like gushing about it, but I was like, oh, Julia Roberts in a new film. I'll watch that. That looks good. And conceptually...
Star power.
Conceptually, I like the idea. I just think they could have done so much better with it. And there were just one too many parts that felt way too implausible. And it just pulled me right out of whatever they were trying to get at.
My main drawback of that film is that everything it looked like it was trying to do, it kind of retracted from them.
It approached and then walked like, away.
Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. I do think we are going to do an episode on Leave the World Behind because we have a big birthday coming up in a few days.
Very big.
Yeah, 30. And we're off to Mexico in January, so we're going to do a bit of a recording day where we put a few time capsule-esque episodes out whilst we're away, and one of which we are planning to be Leave the World Behind. So you'll get to know more about why Ned hated that film.
Yeah, so I won't go into it now.
Yes. Okay, so that's the negative done.
Shall we pop into a quick ad break, have a breather?
Yes, yeah.
And come back for some special mentions and the top 10.
Wow, I just feel like we're on the radio there.
Thank you. See you after the break, listeners.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okie dokie then. Let's do it. So, when we get to the top 10, I just want to explain to our listeners what we do. So, I put my top 10 together. Ned puts his together. We give them all 10 to 1 points and then kind of merge them.
Add them up.
Yeah, add them up. See what then comes out as top 10.
Yeah.
So you might start to be able to decipher or guess what is going to be in the top 10 as well as we go through what we're going to go through first, which is our honourable mentions, films that didn't quite make it. Now, these are either... they were in my top 10, they were in Ned's top 10, or were just ones that we'd like to talk about. That, no, they were either in my top 10, your top 10, or didn't quite make either of our top 10, does that make sense?
Yep.
Anyway, let's get to them. So, I've got How to Have Sex, which you've not seen, which was a great film.
Oh yeah, I
saw
at
Leeds Film Festival. Wonderful British film. Just so lived in, one of those films where you're like, oh, like, I totally want, I feel like I've just lived that experience with those characters. If you've had a similar experience of going on your first girl's holiday or holiday with whoever, you can very much feel it. Marcel Lachelle with Shoes On, which I genuinely thought was going to be in your top 10. Genuinely.
I know. Well, the way I did my top 10, I went through Letterboxd and I wrote all of my faves that I've watched this year that had a release date for this year, obviously. Yeah. And there was like 25 of them. And
Marcel
must have been 11 or 12 out of those, so I'm sorry.
Why did you love it so much? I liked it as well.
So adorable and cute, and it had so much to say, and really kind of is a reminder that, you know, people matter. And
what was that like? Oh, okay.
I can't remember. But it was a long time ago. Very cute. Really, really cute.
On my list as well, I've also got Blue Jean and Passengers, but we've kind of discussed them in the queer shout out part. But another one that really, really, really did nearly make it to my top 10 was Rylane.
Oh, yeah. That was cute.
Great British really film. Really original rom-com. It did all the rom-com type tropes, but it did it from a perspective where we haven't seen a lot of those types of characters, a lot of those locations in film. And I just thought it was wonderful.
Yeah.
And I couldn't recommend it enough. I think it's on Disney Plus. As I think it was a thingy Fox 20th Century film, I think. But I would definitely seek it out.
Yes.
Have you got any you want to shout out? I've got a few more, but...
So the ones that didn't make it into my top 10 but were so close, Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah.
Really, really loved it.
Someone was on about this on a podcast, and there's a scene, and I'm so glad we saw it in the cinema for this, where Godzilla is about to attack.
Yeah.
And the score kicks in, and it's that proper, like, kaiju Japanese... And it was really, like, this is cool.
Really, really scary this is really music. Cool. Yeah. Really love that one. Think everybody who likes a kind of bit of a disaster film definitely will love this one. It's really... beautifully tells the human story in amongst Godzilla attacking Tokyo and the other city whose name I can't remember right now.
Yeah.
Another one, Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret.
Oh, yeah.
Really cute, coming of age, based on a book from the 70s. Yeah. Just about kind of teenage girls being teenagers.
But like, we must something our bust.
Increase
that bust, I like that. Yeah, it was cute. Very cute. I do think it was a really well-made film, that. But didn't quite make it onto my top 10 because it was like, it was almost like the subject matter was so, I don't want to say plain, but you get what I mean? Like, it wasn't pushing any boundaries, but it was just really good.
I didn't try to, there.
No, I know.
But yeah, that, I mean, that's why it wasn't on my top 10.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's one of those where if people seek it out, they're pretty much guaranteed to have a good time.
Yeah. So some of these honourable mentions as well are the ones that have dropped out of the were in your top 10, but dropped out because of the scores adding up.
Oh, well, there's a handful more.
One of which
more.
Is Evil Dead Rise.
Yeah.
Anything you'd like to say about Evil Dead Rise?
Oh, yeah. It was, I mean, to start with, an iconic title card.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Would have that on posters.
Yeah.
It was just a really nice kind of re-revival of the Evil Dead franchise. I'd never experienced any Evil Deads before they announced this was coming out, and then you and I did a bit of a watch through, and I think that it was a film worth making, and they made it really well, and I liked everyone's performances in it. It was scary enough without being like mad disturbing. Some of the kind of gory bits were particularly entertaining if you like gore. And I overall quite liked the story and the character development
in
there as well.
That's the kind of gore I would have liked Megan to have.
Yeah.
I also think it did really well for going somewhere other than a cabin.
Yes. Yeah.
I also have Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
Another one of these films that is a well-known franchise, but is really trying to try something new with the medium of animation. And it did tease at the end something about Shrek coming. And if Shrek decides to go down this route of trying again something a bit more experimental with animation,
yeah,
I would be more than happy to watch something like that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't particularly like a rehash of what has come before.
Great. I've got a couple that weren't on my top 10, so won't have made it into your special mentions list.
Right.
Anatomy of a Fall was just a really, really good courtroom drama, not entirely set in the courtroom.
On the Palme d'Or at Cannes.
Yeah, and I just heard one of the podcasts you were listening to said that some cinemas have been doing, like, when you come out after having watched it, if you think the guy was pushed or if he fell.
Yeah.
And pretty much across the board the score is about 50-50. So it's really fun that it's been
that.
So cleverly put together that you still aren't exactly sure. I think I would have voted for it being a fall, if anyone's interested, rather than a murder.
Well, unfortunately we didn't see that one together.
No.
So even if you'd put that, unless you put that as like 1, 2, or 3, it's
no,
very unlikely,
I mean,
it was
yeah,
going to
exactly.
be on our joint list.
Which is why I thought wanted to give it a quick shout
out. But
I
am looking forward
to
catching up on it when I can.
Interestingly as well, Tetris.
I saw that you'd put that.
Really like
yeah.
it. I think it's a really cool, interesting film for, to say its subject matter. It's essentially kind of, you know, like when Air came out and we were like, it's a film about corporate law.
But it was really good.
Tetris kind of felt a little bit like that, but was really fun and dynamic in its storytelling. And I think Taron Egerton did a really good job as the lead role.
He did.
And it's kind of the perfect sort of Sunday afternoon film if you're not really doing much. And you want something that's going to entertain you and make you think, I would definitely put Tetris on. And I just think worth the shout out just for that, really. If anyone listens to us for recommendations. And The Boy and the Heron, which we saw this afternoon. I was wondering if it would make it onto my top 10, but it didn't quite.
Interesting.
But it's like so close. It might be number 11. You know what I mean?
It was my first introduction to Ghibli, which is something that I hate admitting out loud. But it was weird as anything.
Nobody's perfect.
And I think I would like to watch it again. Just to.
I would love to watch it again. It was. I think a lot of Ghibli films either go down the kind of cute, fluffy stories or
weird.
Weird and wacky.
Yeah.
This was very much, very comfortably in the weird and wacky. If you're a fan of Spirited Away, you'll definitely be a fan of The Boy and the Heron.
And a really good dubbed cast as well.
Excellent dubbed cast.
Christian
Bale,
I'd
be interested to see
Dave
it
Bautista,
subtitled. Actually,
Robert Pattinson.
Yeah,
So
yeah, just that.
Well, I've just got a couple more before we get to our top 10.
I've got a couple that I want to mention that can't be in the top 10.
Go on then, you do yours first.
Well, just want to shout out kind of films we've managed to see because of the film festival that aren't released until next year. I thought if I did Poor Things, you might do the holdovers.
Perfect.
Poor Things, get to see it. Like, it is...
Out on the 12th of Jan.
Out on the 12th of Jan. It'll be in cinemas. Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, Mark Ruffalo, all directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. Did I say his name right?
Yeah.
And it's just so fun. Weird, wacky, steampunk kind of period vibes. Adventure of a lifetime. Very
beautiful,
funny
to look at,
very funny and absolutely stunning. Like, you just want to it's really kind of tactile. I would recommend that one,
and I'm sure people
want
will
to be
see
careful
a lot
not
more
to...
of that as we go fully into award season. And I think I know what you're gonna say.
I want
it's
to
not
be
gonna
careful.
Be for everyone.
I want to be careful not to oversell the concept, because it is a funny kind of conceptual type film. But if you let yourself get into it, you're gonna have a good time.
Yeah,
is what I want to say about that. What about you and The Holdovers?
So The Holdovers is directed by Alexander Payne. Annoyingly, it's out on the 19th of January, when this is very much a Christmas film. The Holdovers refers to students at a boarding school that don't go home for Christmas. They hold over, and one teacher has to stay behind and look after them. There's a lot into it. It's a gorgeous, stick it on the week between Christmas and New Year with the fire on, which I think my family did.
Yeah.
And it's heartwarming, but it's also quite difficult at times.
I think it'll still be a good one to watch late January.
I do, but I just think they missed the trick not putting it out. And I don't know why, because it came out in the US before Christmas.
It is a shame, but such is life. I don't want to put people off seeing it.
No.
You know, like, I don't want to encourage people to put it off till Christmas, because it really deserves, like, a good start.
Yeah. Out on the 19th of Jan. So I've just got two last quick films before
go
we
on.
Get to our top 10. Killers of the Flower Moon. Scorsese's 3.5-hour epic. I love this film.
Yeah.
Right. Scorsese as a director never gets to the top for me.
Okay.
I always enjoy his films, but I don't know what it is. They're just never...
Is it like consistently 4, 4.5, but never 5?
Yeah. Right. I think so.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. And I love talking about that film after, which I think is a very good indicator that you've enjoyed something, or it's at least done what I think film should do, is to like make you think, challenge your views, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I do think we're going to see a lot of this throughout awards season as well. But it didn't quite get up there for me.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Another one, it's a film that I absolutely adored, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I thought it was the best of the trilogy. I thought it was a phenomenal way to go out with this set of the Guardians, and some of the action sequences were so cool. That one in the hallway was just brilliant. I just totally loved it as a film. And in a year where super, not just Marvel films, but superhero films seem to be struggling and going through a bit of a phase at the minute.
Yeah.
It made nearly 900 million at the box office, and I adored it. And it is a Marvel film of the recent few years that if you put it on telly, I'd happily watch it at any point.
Ah,
that's did nice. Some dark things with Rocket as well, like some dark stuff.
Yeah.
And it was quite emotional. So that's our honourable mentions. So.
Does that mean, because the only one that we've talked about that was on my top 10 in the honourable mentions is Evil Dead Rise so far. Does that mean all nine of the rest of my top 10 are in the top 10?
Let's wait and see.
How exciting.
So it is technically a top 10, but we've got quite a few ties with points.
Okay.
So we're starting at in joint sixth.
Oh.
The first one of which is Sisu.
Oh, great.
So this wasn't even in my honourable mentions. It wasn't even on my radar for being in the top
10. Because it placed quite high on mine, it's kicked a few of yours off.
You put it as fifth, I think.
Sixth, I think.
Right, but anyway, yes.
Yeah.
That's where it is. Cool. Want to talk a bit about Sisu?
Yes. It is a World War, I'm going to guess, II film.
Was it?
Well, there was aeroplanes.
The Nazis were leaving.
Well, if it's the Nazis, then it is World War II.
Yeah.
Set in Norway.
One of them.
One of the Scandinavian countries. Apologies to our Scandinavian friends. I'm pretty sure it's Norway. No, it's Finland.
Well, we said one of them.
Yeah, it's Finland. I'm more sure that it's Finland now.
Okay.
Okay. So it follows a guy who we meet when he's digging for gold, and he finds a bunch of gold, and he's like, got to get this to the bank, finders keepers, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, as the Nazis are leaving, I'm going to say Finland, he encounters many rather disgruntled soldiers and stuff, and nobody is in a good mood in this film at all. And he goes through hell and high water just to get his gold to the bank. And he only has one line in the entire film, but his performance is brilliant. Just mind-blowing. Like, really, really good. Proper gritty, violent. Yes. And I think the title Sisu, don't know how you say it in Finnish, is like this concept that doesn't really have an English translation. And it's like a raw determination where you do the thing because it needs doing and you're the one that needs to do it, not necessarily because you want to do it or it's a good thing to do. It just needs doing, so you have to get it done. That's the kind of...
I like that.
The genre of determination.
Exactly that.
That is exactly what this film is. It's really, really good. And if you can get a chance to see it, I would recommend.
So the next film in joint sixth place is Women Talking.
Great.
Yeah. So this is directed by Sarah Polley. It's based off a novel, and it kind of follows this group, isolated community, where women are not treated very well.
Yeah. It's very much patriarchy in the simplest sense.
Yeah.
Like, men do the things, make the decisions, and women are there because women exist and have specific roles.
And it's such, I mean, for a film that has women talking in the title.
Yeah.
It is an incredibly talky film. Yeah. Where each character kind of says, should we stay, should we go? And they all kind of debate it and talk about the realities of all the different things they could do. It's got a phenomenal ensemble cast of Rooney Mara, Claire Foy,
Jesse
Buckley, Judith Ivey, Ben Whishaw and Frances McDormand to name a few.
Yeah.
And it was just, I just couldn't take my eyes off it. It was totally just,
it was really captivating.
Yeah.
Really cleverly done in that you can't really place it in time or space.
No.
Until possibly the last half an hour, 20 minutes.
I think because they're so cut off from society. Yeah. It could be today.
Well, exactly. Yeah. That's the point. Really, really nice. And it's an excellent exercise in kind of seeing how somebody who has a voice who's not used to using that voice decides to use it.
Yes, I would agree.
Is what I liked about that. So, yeah, if you want to get thinking, go and watch Women Talking.
Yes. We have three films in joint fifth.
Oh, okay.
And we shall start with one for you.
Yeah.
Which you placed very highly, which put it on our joint top 10. It's Pearl.
Pearl! Yeah. The sequel to X.
Yeah.
Slasher horror set in, what, early 20th century Midwest?
Mm. Yeah.
Small town, farm girl wants to get a big break on the stage and get out to the big city, etc., etc. And is driven to quite violent acts for being denied such an opportunity.
It has a very specific tone, that yes. film.
I've been trying to remember, and I don't know why I haven't bothered to just Google it. What's her name, the actor?
Mia Goth.
Mia Goth, yes. Just brilliant. A really, really cool way to sequel what was already, I think X was in my, if not our, top 10 last year.
This is what I was about to say. I much preferred X as a film. Like, fair enough. Much preferred X.
I think Pearl is a really fun way to make a, I suppose it's a prequel, to use kind of the casting of Mia Goth in X to then be the older woman from X in Pearl as a young woman. And it was just really, really fun. I love how camp it was. It was very kind of...
It reminded us of Wizard of Oz Gone Wrong.
Super, super fun. Super loved it. And could stand alone as a film. Doesn't necessarily need X to give it the context that you get from it. So,
yeah.
Enjoy.
Also stars our new Superman, David Corenswet.
Oh, does it? Mm. Lovely.
He's the one who gets...
Yes.
Yes. Just didn't want to quite spoil it for everybody in case no. they hadn't seen it. Okay, now another one in joint fifth place that we both really loved. Wonka.
Oh, lovely.
For me, this is totally in the same ilk as the Paddington films. It's a sweet,
yeah,
lovely film yeah. that I would watch at any time.
Musical, by the way. Love the songs. I think the only people I've talked to that didn't like it don't like musicals.
Well, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, we've recently done an episode on it, so we won't talk about it too much, but I just totally loved everything about it. I think I remember saying in about the first 10 minutes, I thought, I'm in safe hands here. Yeah. This is going to be good.
I think if you are or have been a fan of the Roald Dahl books as a child or for your own children, you'll really, really get on with this film.
But even me.
But
yeah.
as we know about Declan, never really been a Roald Dahl person.
A Dalai.
Still has that appeal. So, you know, it's got something going for it. And I think Timothée Chalamet as Wonka was marvellous.
I agree.
Great.
The last one in joint fifth place, which I think this one was down to me, is Tar.
Yeah, it's not on mine.
Totally and utterly, and I know we've touched on it earlier on in this episode, totally loved this film. It was a sit-forward drama that you couldn't take your eyes off. I thought Cate Blanchett, as you said earlier, totally and utterly disappeared into the role. And I just love complex, nuanced characters that aren't one note, that make mistakes, which have got all sorts of complex psychological feelings going on about the mistakes that they've made, coming up against who their personality are. I literally just thought it was phenomenal. And I did say after we'd watched it that I did think it would stay on my top 10 of the year. And it has. I totally...
Smashing.
Totally loved it. Okay. Joint fourth place now. We've got two in joint fourth and then we've got a top three. This one is solely down to you. And I can't believe how high you got it when it was solely down to you.
I think I know which one it is.
The Creator.
Yes. So, I think had we not rewatched it over Christmas, it might have been lower down and therefore fallen off the top 10. But I was reminded of this when I was looking through this year's Letterboxd in preparation for this. And then more than pleased when your family wanted to watch it over Christmas to rewatch it, because it is just fantastic. I think it's a really relevant story, both kind of popular culture wise and political wise, politics wise. It's about AI. Basically, the premise is AI has got so advanced and for whatever reason has detonated a nuclear warhead in Los Angeles. So this story basically is the United States versus AI. It tells it through lenses that indicate differences in culture around the world. It's very much kind of near future dystopia. But it's quite obviously not based on kind of the world as we know it today, because it's kind of the United States and where they're all kind of operating on their military missions is called New Asia.
Yes.
Which kind of indicates a United States-esque
well, I think it's East
setup.
Versus West.
It's an East versus West thing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the filming looked to have been done in the kind of Mekong Delta in
rice
Vietnam.
Everywhere.
Lots of rice paddies everywhere. Lots of gorgeous kind of natural rock formations and forests. And Gemma Chan is in it, but not a main character, but is quite a central to the storyline character. And one thing actually that really sealed its place quite high in my top 10... the kind of, what's that word? MacGuffin. Is that a word?
MacGuffin.
MacGuffin is the child who is the AI that is like the weapon that the US are scared of, basically. Their performance as a child actor in this film, which is really quite emotionally wrenching as a story, is just fantastic.
I agree.
You're not ever irritated by the way they're portraying the character, which is rare for children, even good ones. So yeah, I just loved it. It's exactly up my street, a dystopian sci-fi. And yeah, I can't sing its praises enough, really.
Cool. last one.
Yeah.
Well, I think you pretty much did it. It wouldn't have got that high for me. Oh, this is one thing I will say about this film. Not enough people saw it. And I am sick of hearing people say, all that's in cinemas is sequels or franchises.
This is original content.
There is so much original stuff. I mean, we have just talked so far already. Sisu, Women Talking, Pearl, Tar and The Creator. All great films that anybody could have gone and watched.
Yeah.
So... if you have one film New Year's resolution, listeners, which we're probably talking to the wrong crowd because you are listening to a film podcast, yeah. But encourage your friends, your family, go see some of these different films.
Yeah, just get yourself sat in that cinema seat.
Yes. Anyway, last one in joint fourth, John Wick Chapter 4.
Yeah.
Which I think was higher on your list than mine, which shocked me slightly.
Well, if you'd have told me... after having watched John Wick
exactly.
1, that John Wick 4 would be in my top 10 of the year, I would have spit in your face. but credit where credit is due, I think John Wick 4 was really cool.
When we were on about early in this episode, what was it a good year for? It was a good year for action.
It was a good year for action.
John Wick 4, the stairs sequence, the...
The bit where the camera was above and it was going through the building and they were throwing each other through walls and shooting each other with all sorts. Oh,
the sequence around the Arc de Triomphe where all of it was just so, so good. And I would be quite happy if the main John Wick franchise ended there. I know we're getting a spin-off, Ballerina, with Ana de Armas, which I'm more than happy for them to do spin-offs, but I would like it if John Wick ended there.
Okay.
So, top three. Here we go.
Yeah.
I'm sure some people who are avid cinephiles will have thought, there's some films I haven't really mentioned a lot of. So, in third place is Oppenheimer.
Yep. A very worthy third place, I think, for the year.
A 3-hour, another talkie, part black and white.
Yeah.
I would say it's depressing as hell. It's not a cheery watch.
Oh, it definitely makes you kind of step back and take a look at the state of the world.
But it's an important film, and I would say it's Chris Nolan probably at his best. Like, he, in both the craft of the film, but I think his serious tone lends quite... who he is as a person comes across quite serious. The subject matter of Oppenheimer and the atom bomb goes hand in hand with the kind of filmmaking that and storytelling that I believe that he wants to do.
I think what I like about it is kind of placed in the world that we live in now, there is quite reasonable and very clear criticism of kind of the choice of subject matter in a film and how representation of particular marginalized groups might necessarily not have been portrayed in this film and various other reasons that people might choose not to see it. The people who I know who have seen it, whether they are kind of part of that discourse or not, the ones who criticize it, their only real criticism is how long it is. Everyone else seems to really like it. So I
think it's a bit of a lazy criticism to say, oh, it's 3 hours, I'm not watching that. Well, it's 3 hours of a fucking great film.
It's a really good film.
Just watch,
if you're not watching it at the cinema, you can just pause it and go for a wee or make a cup of tea or watch it in two sittings. I don't mind. But you're missing out if your only reason to not like it is that it's 3 hours. So yes, having said that, I do sometimes get a bit frustrated about the fact that if I know I'm going to see a 3-hour film at the cinema, I have to dehydrate myself that day.
I think that's more in your head than in your bladder though.
Well, I wish studios would listen to my concern and start either putting intervals in or making films a bit shorter.
Yes. Okay. Number two.
Number two.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
I love this film so, so much. Like, we watched it again over Christmas. And it's
watched it 3 times this year.
I think that was my fourth.
Oh, I was about to be embarrassed, but 4 is embarrassing.
I've listened to people on podcasts say they've watched it 8, 9, 10 times this year.
Oh my God.
I think it's because it's just, even though it uses a brand that we all know and love so well, it's just so wildly original.
Oh, fantastic. I think maybe that's part of what makes it so brilliant, is that it's got that familiarity to it because it's obviously Barbie and Mattel. But it is original film content. It's not a sequel, it's not a franchise, it is a movie in and of itself.
Yeah. Never known a film say patriarchy so much.
No, I know. And do it so well in such like a light-hearted, funny way.
And do you know what's quite funny? Like, it could potentially not even pass the Bechdel test, but...
It does, though, because it's named female characters having conversations with each other, not about men.
But do they ever have a conversation? Yes.
Yeah, pretty much all the time.
No, they don't. They always talk about Ken's...
No, they don't.
They do.
President Barbie, can I ask you what your favourite colour is?
No, I know, but I just mean, like, even if it didn't, it would be quite a funny thing if it didn't, because I think that's the whole point.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, again, another film that's going to be everywhere during awards season. Whether it will win a lot, I don't know, but just so you know, it get the recognition it wants. And the lessons that I want Hollywood to learn is, no, we don't want Barbie 2. I don't think.
No, I don't think we want Barbie 2.
I don't think we want a Ken film.
No.
I just think we want to have it, and I just want you to look at it and go, oh, turns out if you put really good...
top quality original content.
Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach together and believe in the talent and give them some creative autonomy, then we might actually get some really good films.
Yes.
And I also will shout out that Margot Robbie is a producer on this, and she said that she thinks it could make a billion easy when she pitched it to Warner Brothers. And it has done, and I'm just so glad.
And easily.
Yeah. And I'm so glad to see someone like her. I am liking this trend, and I think we've touched on it before, like female creatives going into the producing world as well, and just kind of using their names to get other films made because they...
Elizabeth Banks.
Well, yeah, we touched on that example. Before. There's quite a few.
Yeah.
Frances McDormand was the producer on Women Talking. Like, a lot of them are all, like, you know...
Love that.
So I love that. Are we ready then? We actually both... Yes. For how different the list was kind of our three top, downwards...
Top two.
We're both in sync.
Yeah. Go on then, reveal the top.
Number one is Past Lives.
Past Lives. Past Lives, so good.
So amongst like all the glitz and glamour of Barbenheimer and all these other films that came out, there's this small directional debut by Celine Song.
Yeah.
That is a film for me. The reason why it is so high and at number one for me is whilst everything else has been so good, it's a film that I have thought about so much since watching it.
I still think about it.
Like, just really taps into how humanity works and connections work.
And I want to watch it again and again and again.
It was it's a truly, truly just... simple but beautiful, beautiful film.
Yeah.
To see Greta Lee get the recognition she deserves.
Yeah.
From some of the awards shows that are coming, noms that are coming out so far.
Yeah.
I just think she is. I can't. It's like one of those performances where you're like, am I even watching anybody acting here? Because it looks like she's talking.
Yeah,
I'm watching her life.
These are real people doing real things, and this story has been woven together so delicately. And what's really lovely about it is that because it's so kind of real and personable, you can laugh along, and if you want to have a cry, you can have a cry, and if you want to have a laugh, you can have a laugh. If you want to get mad at the state of the world, you can get mad at the state of the world. And if you want to notice all of the kind of beauty around you, then you can see all of that in this as well. I just loved it.
It's almost like, depending on what mood you're going into each time you watch it,
is what you'll take into it.
So different out of it as well.
Yeah.
Like,
it was so, so gorgeous.
Collider, the digital publisher, said... they've ranked it as number 7 on their list of the 20 best drama movies of the 2020s so far. And they're calling it a story that could only exist because of modern circumstances, but feels timeless in its approach. How does someone choose between two lovers, one that represents the most fruitful days of her youth, and the other someone she has grown to love as part of her reality? Celine Song examines these critical conversations through the perspective of an immigrant story as well. Again, it has that complex. But I don't necessarily always like to shout out other reviewers and stuff or other opinions. But that's worded way better than I could ever try and fudge something to get out. But truly, so deserved. And I hope... I actually think Past Lives might be a bit of a dark horse at awards season this year. And
oh, deservedly so, like, though.
Everyone's like, Barbie, Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon, this, that. I think this. Yeah. And another film that's coming out in the UK soon as well, which I'm hearing amazing things about, could called The Zone of Interest, might do very well.
Amazing.
So that is 2023 done. The next episode is going to be hopefully not as long as this one. I don't think it will be, but it's going to be all about a bit of a 2024 preview.
Yeah.
But I kind of just want to say we've had quite a lot of new listeners this year. Our podcast, our small, independent, homemade podcast is growing quite nicely and we're quite happy with it. So for listeners that have been with us from the beginning, thank you.
Thank you.
New ones coming along.
We love you.
We love you. And, you know, please do let us know who you are. Chat with us on Instagram, all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, I guess...
One lovely New Year gift to us from you, if I may be so bold as to ask, listeners. I know we say it at the end of every episode, but if you could possibly do your star ratings and leave a couple of sentences, reviews on any and all platforms that you listen to us on, it'll really help the algorithms tell other people who might like to listen to us go on about films.
Because we've done quite well on Spotify, but on Spotify, all you can do at the minute is just give it a star rating.
Yeah.
So if specifically, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, yeah, leave a review and a couple of lines about what you like about the podcast.
Likewise for the Android version as well.
Does Google do that?
Google, yeah.
I'm not sure. It's like...
Those ones. If you can leave...
a brand new thing. Google, that's the one, yeah.
If you can... If you can leave words, please leave words. If you can't, stars are more than appreciated. And do you know what? It's been all year I've had to run off in the last kind of sentence just to get the gaydar. Today, I remember to bring the gaydar with me. We're not even doing a gaydar.
No.
Oh, well.
Are we done? And that's all for this time. If you have enjoyed this episode of Gaze on Film, please subscribe, rate and comment on your podcasting platform of choice, as we've just said, but I'm keeping to the script. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Gaze on Film Pod. We'd love to hear your thoughts, so please do feel free to drop us a message. What's your favourite film of this year?
You've taken Letterboxd out.
I haven't. I think I just copied and pasted from the 2022 episode and we didn't use Letterboxd then.
Right.
So also... Our Letterboxd accounts that are linked in the show notes if you'd like to follow us on there, if yes, you use it. But yeah, I have been Declan.
And I have been Ned.
And this has been Gaze on Film. Thanks for listening.
See you in 2024.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.